Great to see you all this morning. Pretty good turnout. I know, well, it's an area of interest for all of us young ones. So what I told my group this morning I met with at 6:30, it's good for everybody because everybody can fall into this trap. But we are delighted today to have Matt Tootle with us, FBI agent. He's been with the FBI for 18 years and married and has two boys. One goes to Auburn, so it kind of splits the room right there. But we are glad to have you. He's with the worked on the police force up in Knoxville for 5 years or so up there, and we were just talking about it. And if you're ever in Knoxville, we were just talking about there's a great used bookstore called McKay's. You know, any of y'all ever been there? It's right off the interstate, Interstate 40 going through. We go there every time. There's also one in Chattanooga. Anyway, just a couple announcements first before we begin. We have our missions conference, ministries conference coming up this coming week, and we have these little prayer guides that hopefully you all have one. If not, they're in all the kiosks surrounding the church. Please make use of them. And we have a lot of Trailblazer events. We got a trip going to Charleston toward the end of March, and we have a few openings there, and it should be a great trip. And it's one of the busiest, you know, like years we've had in a while, but this summer we got a trip planned for the Cove, a trip planned for the Ark, and then in September to Tuscany, September 27th to October 5th. So, and these are just scattered around the kiosks and also on our website. And I appreciate Sharon for doing all this legwork and putting everything together. She's literally my right. Pastor Reeder is going to go with us to the Ark. And that last time he had a contact that we were given the royal treatment. And so, I mean, it does make a difference having him along. It's good to have him anyway, but he did have a contact with it. Also, I noticed on this table out there that this is a great prayer sheet for the ministry conference, Global Ministries Conference coming up. It's out. There's one outside. But anyway, just be praying for that all week. And anyway, we look forward to having Matt with us. They say this is an area of interest for all of us. And I'm going to open us with a word of prayer and turn it over to him. Father, we just thank you for this time together. And it's sad we live in such a depraved society and we see so much abuse going on. And, but Lord, you, in your common grace, you've raised up some wonderful people to help us in this area. And I just really pray today for Matt, just what he'll be sharing, that you'd be with him and help us all to become better attuned and have safer households. But Lord, whatever we do, we want you to be given the glory. And we just thank you for love and for your son. In his name we pray. Amen.
Well, thank you, Dave. And I really just want to say thank you to all of you for having me. Thank you to Sharon for arranging this. As Dave said, my name's Matt Tootle. I've been with the FBI. I'm starting my 18th year. Started my career as a police officer in Knoxville, Tennessee. And so he mentioned I had a son at Auburn. And I guess I've learned over the past couple of years that I believe I've invented a new word. Because I was raised essentially in Tennessee. I went to the University of Tennessee. Moved here. I'm married to a lifelong Alabama fan. My oldest son, who was born in Knoxville, raised in Tuscaloosa, now goes to Auburn. So the new word is trivided. We are house trivided. Because my youngest son has decided to follow in the paths of his brother, and now he's an Auburn fan, of course. Big brother's at Auburn, so he's an Auburn fan. But I really want to let you know that I do count this a treat and a blessing to be able to speak to you all for a couple of different reasons. You know, number one, the title of this presentation is Elder Fraud Awareness, but as Dave said, it really should just be fraud awareness. This doesn't just target a particular age group, but why it's so important to me is because my mom would be in this group. And frankly, after hearing Dave talk about the trip to Charleston and Tuscany and the Ark and the Cove, I'm thinking I would kind of like to join the group. I've never been to the Cove, but I've heard great things about it. One of my favorite speakers, a guy named Steve Brown, I know always speaks at the Cove. And so I guess another reason why I'm excited to be here is I do this presentation with various groups around the community, but adult ministries or seasoned adult ministries at churches is really close to home because I am a believer in Jesus. And so for me, this is an outpouring of my day job, but it also feels like a form of ministry because as we're going to talk about today in this presentation, this is so important because in my opinion, and I think the opinion of other professionals, the only real way to combat crimes like this is through education and awareness and getting people talking about it and willing to talk about it and willing to tell stories about it. So the only ground rule I have is that this is for you. If you don't leave here feeling like your questions were answered or you received information that's valuable, then I haven't done my job. And so if you've got questions or comments, let me know. At the end, I've got a portion where I say, do you have questions? But if things come up throughout this, please, you know, ask your question because my whole intent is for you to leave here with more knowledge than you got here. And so to start out, why is this important? Why are we talking about these types of scams? Why does it matter? There's a lot of it going on, absolutely. And I should have mentioned, if this is washed out and you feel better with the lights dimmed, I don't know if that's an option. Definitely don't want... I do have a tendency to put people to sleep when I talk, so if the lights are too dark. But it's a rainy day outside, if this is your time for nap. So yeah, there's too much of it going on. And to highlight that, I've got a graphic here. And this is from 2021. We don't have the full set of numbers yet from 2022, but the numbers are staggering. In 2021, we had over 92,000 victims, and these are people over the age of 60. So for statistical purposes, when we talk about elder fraud, we're talking about people over the age of 60. But again, these scams target every single demographic. But of those, we had $1.7 billion in losses. And this is in 1 year. The average loss was a little over 18,000, but we had over 3,000 victims lose over $100,000. So that's why we're talking about it. The numbers are, yeah. No, this is nationwide. But the numbers are staggering, and so the statistics would match these, just not as high, but in Birmingham, because again, what I oversee in our Birmingham office is the financial crime program. And so I hear, unfortunately, the stories of victim after victim here in our area. And these numbers are true to form. I hear stories of hundreds of thousands of dollars lost to the types of scams we're talking about. But this slide I know is very difficult to see. The only reason I have it up here is to highlight, as staggering as those numbers were on the last slide, when I put this together in September of last year, we were well on track, and we already are, to exceed those numbers for 2022. Year to date, in September of 2022, we were already over $2 billion in losses. And what I think is unique about this, our numbers of victims are about the same, but our dollar amount has gone up. Our average dollar amount was around $32,000 in 2022, where if you remember from the last slide, it was around $18,000. So what should that tell us? What does that mean to us if the dollar amounts are going up? The scammers are getting more creative. As much awareness as we put out there, as much information sessions and websites that help target this, the scammers adapt and overcome. They find out creative ways to get their hooks in people and creative ways to keep their hooks in people. And so my objective today is to talk about what are some of those common scams, what are the warning signs, and what can we collectively as a group and a community do to combat this type of stuff? Yes, ma'am. Oh, yeah, BEC. Sorry, that's business email compromise. And so essentially what that is, let's say you're buying a house and you're dealing with a closing company and you're used to doing emails back and forth with that closing attorney. What happens, the scammers will compromise that email account. And they're going to take over and they're going to start emailing you from an email address that looks very, very similar. It might just have one character transposed, but the email address looks very similar to the email address of the closing company that you're using. And they're going to say, hey, John, we're all set for closing, but the wiring instructions have changed. So for your $80,000 down payment, wire it to this account. And they're going to sign it the same name that you've been emailing. They're going to see, okay, yeah, this is from Sharon at the title company, and the email address, if you look at it, it's very similar. You know, there's those studies on if you read a sentence, and even if the words are misspelled, you interpret what the words are. You read through it and you see, okay, and you can read the entire sentence even though almost every word is misspelled because your brain translates it. Well, if you've been used to seeing this email address one certain way and suddenly you see it, yes, such and such at title.com, you're not going to analyze every single letter in that email address. And so that's essentially what that is. And they'll get you to wire the money. It's going to go to an account and quickly move somewhere else. So again, what we're going to talk about this morning are some of our most common scams targeting that population over 60. But before we get into that, why target this population? Why target the population over 60? Usually they'll have savings. Anything else?
Less tech savvy.
You know, sometimes there's some that are more tech savvy than me. But yeah, as a general rule, because technology advances by the minute, it seems like. And so, I mean, we're all carrying cell phones that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, these cell phones are more powerful than the computers. So, and it adapts and changes. So they've got a savings because a lot of them, maybe the houses are paid off. They've got a nest egg. Maybe, unfortunately, they've recently got a life insurance policy, so they know that they have the money. So you... More fearful. And we're going to touch on that piece. More fearful, but also, what about more trusting? Aren't we from the generation where if somebody calls and they sound legitimate and they sound nice and they say the right things, maybe we trust them a little too much? Where the younger generation, if they get a phone call, they may be real quick to tell them what they can do with, you know, and hang up on them and or maybe ignore them. Or maybe we feel like if the phone rings, we have to answer it because we're just so used to that. You know, I don't want to miss a call. The scammers know that. So again, more likely to have a savings, to own their own home. Maybe not so familiar with technology and more trusting. 70% of our nation's wealth belong to the population over 60. And so that's like the gentleman here said. When you think about it, the scammers, it's like targeted advertising. You're going to go after the group that has what you want and is maybe willing to be a little more trusting. So we're going to talk about some of the most common scams. The first one is the tech support scam. Does anybody have any idea what that might be, the tech support? Sir? Yeah, this is Microsoft calling. So it may be you get a pop-up on your computer saying we've identified a virus on your computer or there's a problem, or you may get a phone call. Well, I heard a case recently where somebody got a phone call and the person on the other end purported to be from Apple and said, look, we've identified evidence of child pornography on your computer, and we're going to help you get rid of that, and then started threatening legal action. And this lady knew they have never done it, but there was, as the gentleman back here said, more fearful. That person created such a level of fear that the police were coming, you've got nothing you can do, so you've got to pay money and we'll help fix this and get rid of it. One of the things we're going to talk about throughout this is the perceived sense of urgency. And you're probably going to hear me say it several times, but that's one of the techniques the scammers use is they create this sense of urgency that you've got to do something now. And so one of the biggest takeaways that I'm going to say, and I'm going to say it over and over, is just pause. Just pause. Nothing is that urgent. And then the second piece, engage someone else. Talk to somebody else. But we'll talk about that some more. So yeah, that's the tech support scam. It can range from anything. There's a problem with your computer, your cell phone. And it always ends up with you've got to send us some money. The next is the confidence or romance scam. And this is the one that we see some of the most of in our area and really around the country. Tech support scam, we see a lot of that. But the confidence romance scam, what do y'all think I'm talking about when I talk about the romance scam? What's that? Yeah, maybe a relationship from overseas. Online dating. Yeah, and so again, the population we're talking about, maybe some of them have been widowed. Maybe they're lonely. Family is elsewhere. They've gotten to that stage where they feel like, okay, I want that companionship. I just don't know how to meet anyone. So they're going to get online. It may even just start through Facebook. But what happens is they'll develop this initial relationship, and this is the perfect relationship. I assume everybody in this room has been in a relationship at one time or another, probably currently is, and we know that there's no perfect relationship. Nobody likes everything you like and agrees with everything that you believe. But what happens when you meet that person and suddenly this person is interested in everything you're interested in, never disagrees, says all the right words, and what we've seen, and again, this goes back to what we talked about a minute ago about how they adapt and overcome. What we've seen is these scammers are very patient in the area of relationship scams. It would be a warning sign if you meet somebody online and within a day or so they're saying, hey, can you send me money? Red flag goes up. But what about after 2 or 3 months of every day talking to this person, developing that common bond? I talked to one victim who had sent over $300,000 to the scammer, and she said every morning at 6 a.m. we got up and we prayed together. And that's before the single ask. And again, if you're asked for $100,000 pretty quickly, red flag. But what if it's, again, this is a relationship you've been in for 30, 60, you know, 45 days. You know this person and they know you. And the ask is $120 to help with a surgery for his sick daughter. That kind of gets you. That's minuscule. I mean, $120, this is somebody I love and I care about. They've got a sick child or they've got a surgery they need. And they promise they're going to pay me back when we see each other because he said he's coming here. And so there's always that promise. But after that $120, then there's another ask and another ask, and all the while they're building this trust and relationship. They're extremely patient. Lottery sweepstakes, I think we're all familiar with that. You've won a huge prize. You don't remember entering the prize. You don't remember entering this lottery or sweepstakes. But the problem with this is they are so convincing. They get your attention. And again, it's a huge prize, you know, $300 million. And the initial ask is, you know, $7,200 for taxes. Okay, in comparison, that's nothing. But there's a sense of urgency and there's a sense of secrecy. They know now. Used to, they would say, hey, don't tell anybody about this. Well, that became a red flag. So again, one of the ways the scammers have adapted is they don't tell you, hey, don't tell anybody. But they rephrase it. They use a form of psychological manipulation and say, hey, look, you're welcome to tell anybody you want as long as you're ready for everybody to come out of the woodwork asking for money. Because we all know if you win $300 million, suddenly you've got cousins you've never heard of and, you know, everybody wants a piece of it. So they're going to say, look, you know, you can tell whoever you want about this as long as you're prepared to deal with the onslaught of people. And so that's going to create the level of secrecy. The grandparent scam. Anybody heard of that? Has anybody received one of those phone calls? Okay, so we all have. The grandparent scam, for those that aren't familiar with it, you may get a phone call, and they may call you Nana or Nina or whatever your name is, and they may use the true grandchild's name. Nana, this is Johnny. I've been in a terrible car wreck, or I've been arrested, or somebody calls and says, hey, we've got Johnny kidnapped. You need to send us money immediately. And these, there is always that sense of urgency, and a sense of secrecy. Don't tell anybody. And that really pulls at the heartstrings because you know this is your loved one, or you believe this is your loved one. And what I want to talk about here is, how do you think they know that information to talk about? Social media. And that's one of the things I want to harp on, and this is one of the actual suggestions I would like to make, is that we almost have a safety check opportunity, because the reality is a lot of folks that maybe are not as technologically savvy are still on social media, but they don't know how to lock down some of their profile settings to make it where not everybody in the world can see my Facebook profile or my Instagram profile. And there are some simple steps that you can take to look at your social media accounts and make sure they're not visible to the public. And one of the things I would encourage is maybe partnering with the college or young adults ministry. Number one, they're going to be familiar with all of those social media accounts and how to do security settings. And then I also think if y'all were to do a luncheon or a breakfast with them, I think they're going to learn a lot from you all too. I think there's benefit. Maybe they talk about social media security and you all talk about how to live a well-lived life, you know, how to finish strong. So I could see that as being, you know, maybe an opportunity, because what I encourage folks to do is treat this almost like a safety inspection. Before I move my mom into an apartment, for example, I'm going to walk through and make sure there's smoke detectors, there's a fire extinguisher, the locks work. I would suggest the same thing for any of our online tools, social media, phones. Have somebody who's knowledgeable in that, that you trust, say, hey, take a look at my Facebook. Are there things I can put on my cell phone to block some of these? Because what happens in that grandparent scam, maybe you do a Facebook post that says, it was so nice to have Johnny and Susie here for the weekend. They love it when Nana and Papa take them out to ice cream. What did we just advertise to the world? Nana and Papa, Johnny and Susie. And the reality is these scammers are not just willy-nilly. There are sweatshops, essentially boiler rooms, of people at computers doing nothing but trolling social media accounts, social engineering, finding out everything they can about all of these accounts. And then they're going to use open source resources. You can pay for some of these database checks to say, okay, how do I find this person's phone number? And so now they've built a profile of you. They know what your grandparent name is. They know what your grandkids' names are. They may know some that Johnny's at Auburn or at the University of Alabama. Any of that that's on your Facebook page, people are going to capture and eventually attempt to use against you. So there's some simple steps in there to make it where the general public can't look at my Facebook page, only my friends. And so that's one of the takeaways I would say is make sure your social media accounts are locked down. And then next, the government impersonation. I think we've all had this. Maybe they call you and say your IRS number or your Social Security number has been compromised. It was used in somehow involved in drug trafficking, and you know you don't have anything to do with that. And now they're coming after you, and they've got a warrant. And they always have these very convincing sets of language, very compelling, tremendous sense of urgency. And again, there's always an ask. We're going to talk here in a minute about how the money moves around, but a lot of times in any of these, the ask is go buy a prepaid debit card. So again, what I'm going to say is don't buy into the sense of urgency. Nothing is going to happen immediately. Step back and think through it. Does it make sense? Is the IRS going to want me to go to Walgreens and get a prepaid debit card to pay my taxes? And when we talk about the prevalence of this, it's easy to keep it at an arm's distance, but I asked how many people in the room have, you know, had it happen. My own mother-in-law owns her own business and got a phone call that the power bill had not been paid and it was about to be cut off. And this is a business that relies heavily on power. It was a daycare, so that she had to rely on kids coming in and out. And it was like, if we lose the power, if it's cut off now, we're in huge trouble. And what did they tell her? Go to Walgreens, get prepaid debit cards, and that's how you can pay your power bill. And that sense of urgency and the threat of what could happen was so great, it kind of pushed common sense to the side. And she's an intelligent woman. And she was getting ready to get in the car to go to Walgreens when she talked to her business partner. Said, no, I've paid the power bill. She backed up, called me. We talked through it and realized, yeah, this is absolutely a scam. So those are some of the takeaways. Whether it's a relationship, some kind of a winning, a threat from the government, a bill that's due. Maybe it's even an Amazon shipment that they said that you've received and you're like, I don't remember ordering this. Slow down and talk to somebody. Find somebody to process this with. Because two sets of eyes and two minds thinking about it, and just even that initial initial step of slowing down gives us time to interject some common sense. These are some of the favorite lies that the scammers use. So we've got the top one. That's a lot of times the grandparent scam. I'm in jail or I'm sick. I can teach you how to invest. We're seeing a lot more of those, especially with the rise of cryptocurrency. People are going to talk to you about how much money cryptocurrency can make. And, you know, it's so complicated. Let me handle that piece of investment for you. Red flag. I'm in the military far away. So that's where we're going to get into some of the romance scams. I need help with an important delivery. We're going to talk about that here in a minute. When we talk about the movement of money. We've never met, but hey, let's go ahead and talk about marriage. But we've got such this great relationship and we agree. We love the same things. We never, ever disagree. I love you so much. I want to marry you. I'm coming back to the States, you know, in 3 weeks. Here's a picture of the ring. And I've come into a lot of money. I'm on an oil rig or a ship. We see that. It's always an excuse why they're somewhere else. They love you with all their heart, but they're somewhere else and they're coming here. And then unfortunately, you can trust me with your private pictures. We do see that happening. And then that leads to a whole nother form of abuse because they may find somebody that sends them maybe a picture that they wouldn't want out there in the open. And this is somebody that loves you and you love them. Now they've got the picture and then suddenly it turns to extortion because what they've done is they've already copied your entire Facebook page, your entire Instagram account. They know who all your friends are and they'll send you a screenshot and say, look, here's all your friends. If you don't want this picture going out to all of them, send me $10,000 or whatever. It's a term called sextortion. And it doesn't really hit the over 60 population as much, but that is not saying it doesn't. But I am saying that is running rampant through our teenagers. I'm hearing story after story of 14-year-olds that are extremely depressed because they're caught up in this, because they've met some person online that they believe is really interested into them. They talk them into sending a compromising picture, and then, you know, think about it. It's a 14-year-old, and all of these pictures are going to go out to all of your friends. And unfortunately, I've heard stories where they have found ways to send money until they can't send any more money, then they go to their parents. And it's terrible. So again, these scams affect everyone.
13, and now swindled out of tens of thousands of dollars by a man she met online.
It is a warning that you should hear and you should pass on.
That's right, and senior citizens seem to be a prime target here. Eyewitness News reporter Jessica Willie is live with how this scam works.
Yeah, Eric, most of us think we can detect a scam, and so did this woman. Her bank told her money, thousands of dollars, is now likely in Nigeria, never to be seen again.
He was born in Arkansas, lived most of his life in Germany, and now calls London home. That was Brock Carl's story, and this Houston widow fell for it.
He was charming. He is charming. The person is charming.
She wants to remain anonymous because she's embarrassed she was scammed.
I'm very smart, and I'm also very street smart.
She's 74 years old, a businesswoman who one day got a friend request on Facebook from Carl, a man she didn't know.
He was very, very carefully and very professionally insinuating himself into my life.
It took 3 months for him to ask for money. She was the engineer's only hope, he said, for a bridge deal he was working on in India. He sent her a copy of what she thought was his passport. It earned her trust. By then, she says, she was also falling in love.
He's quite patient about this and quite clever. In retrospect.
Over the course of several weeks, she wired him around $60,000. Eventually, a friend intervened. She met private investigator Rob Kimmons, who reported it to the FBI.
She was actually the third. We've had two others, and they actually had much bigger losses.
Online dating scams are rampant, and the scammers are good. They target older women, mostly widows. They're patient and caring, but none of it is real. Carl was likely in Africa.
If you've never met them and you're talking on social media and they ask for money, stop it right there.
This victim has lived and learned.
I hate it. And I'm very sorry that I got sucked in, but I won't lose another penny. I can assure you that.
Jessica Willey, 13 Eyewitness News.
So just from what we've talked about already this morning, what are some things you saw in the video? What are some of the things you heard? Patience. Charming.
Patient insinuation.
Yeah, patient insinuation. A patient inserting himself into her life. The Facebook request, she's never met him.
Yes.
Documented his passport. So, yeah, I mean, they have all kinds of compromised photos. Again, that gets to one of the things about pausing, asking somebody else to help. Younger folks know all about what you can do with photos. You can actually put them into a Google search, and it'll search that photo, and it'll pop up and show you, okay, yeah, this photo has been all over the internet. People are using this photo, and it'll tell you pretty quickly that this is false. Took 3 months to ask for money. He was charming, caring, developed the relationship. And then the other piece, she's smart. She's a businesswoman. And we're going to get to that later on about some of the barriers of talking about it. But I think this is why these groups and conversations like this are so important, because people that become victimized by this end up embarrassed. They don't want to talk about it because they feel like, okay, I should have known better. She said, I should have known better. But that should never be the case, because I'm here to tell you, these scammers are very, very good. They spend all day, every day, coming up with ways to convince and get their hooks in people. And so in order for us to do anything about this, it's got to be an environment where people are willing to talk and share stories about, hey, this is how I was victimized, or this is how the person called me, and get the word out. So we talk about how the money moves, because a lot of times they are overseas, so how are they going to get it? And again, this should raise some red flags when you hear this. And we see them do it through the traditional money service business, Western Union or whatever, but the scammers have become a little more creative. They know that if you go to Publix, to Western Union, sometimes they're paying attention to that. And so at the very bottom of that, you see virtual currency. I spoke to a lady, the same lady that got up every morning at 6 a.m. to pray with the victimizer. And again, she was over $300,000 lost. And basically everything you see on this screen, she had done. She started sending a Western Union. They transitioned to cash. I'm going to show some pictures here in a minute of, you know, how that cash is sent. But banks are very good now and are actually required to know their customer. And so a lot of banks on the front lines pay attention and realize, okay, you never do this. You never come in and withdraw large amounts of cash, and they start asking questions. That helped for a little bit. The scammers adapt and overcome and adjust. And this lady I mentioned to you, she said, well, yeah, when I went into the bank to get the money, the scammers told me, hey, if the bank asks you questions about this, tell them you're remodeling your bathroom. Well, that makes perfect sense why you need $10,000, $15,000. You're remodeling your bathroom. You're getting new flooring. So they're coaching her through it. Then they talk to her. I mean, who in this room would know how to buy cryptocurrency right now? I don't either. I don't deal with that. I only know it from a standpoint of studying it, but I've never done it. But this lady who was over 80 years old, they coached her through how to add an application to her phone, how to purchase cryptocurrency, and how to send cryptocurrency. Things that we have never done, they coached her how to do it. And that was all in the promise of a huge lottery winning. And psychologically, they get in your head and, well, now you know you've already invested $100,000. So if it's just 15 more to get the big prize, that'll pay everything off. And that's what happened with her, and it became a snowball. And of course, the reloadable debit gift cards, that's the whole idea. We talked about it earlier. Go to Walgreens, get it, and then send me a picture of it. And so that's what some of these pictures are. You see the debit card there. The little piece of paper next to it is the PIN number. So that's what they're going to say. Send me a picture of the card. Send me a picture of the PIN number. And that's going to take care of your power bill, or that's going to take care of your IRS debt. Again, common sense says absolutely not, but when that sense of urgency and that threat goes up, sometimes common sense goes down. Other times, just cash in a magazine because it might throw people off. You know, you take the magazine into the post office, you're just mailing this to a friend, even though there's a stack of cash. And every one of these pictures here are from cases that we've worked here in this area of where we've recovered the money or found out, how it was done. And then sometimes it's just, cold hard cash in an envelope sent somewhere overseas.
I'm 81 years old. In 2014, I met the love of my life online, and he told me that he was a U.S. citizen and was working in Nigeria. He asked me for money to help with his business and help leave Nigeria. Then my love had people send me electronics like cell phones so I could pawn them and send him the money. When I couldn't get the money that he wanted, he asked me to open personal and business bank accounts. Since 2015, bank employees, local police officers, and federal agents told me that my love was a scam and that I needed to stop or I could go to jail. I didn't listen to anyone else but my love, the love I've never seen nor spoken to. Now I don't have a choice of whom I'll listen to. On November the 2nd, 2021, I pled guilty to two federal felonies. I'll be listening to the judge now.
And so that's one of the more heartbreaking realities of cases like this, because when we talk about some of the complexities of these cases, one of the biggest challenges is the use of money mules. Had anybody heard that term before today? When you think of a traditional fraud case or a traditional financial case, how do you prove the crime? You follow the money. I mean, that's, you always hear that, follow the money. And so it would make sense if I'm the scammer and I get one of you all to send me money, you just follow the money. Who did he send the money to? And that's going to lead to the bad guy. That's where these vast networks of money mules comes into play and makes it so challenging. People just like the lady we saw, they either believe they're doing this for their, as she called them, my love, or they believe they're working from home. This is a work from home job. you know, I want to make a little extra money. I see this ad on Craigslist or Facebook. You can work from home as a payment processor or as a payment collector. And they convince you that all you've got to do is open a business account. You're going to receive payments from our customers, run it through your account. You keep $100 for yourself, and then you send it off to our corporate account. But the problem is that corporate account that you're sending it to is also not the bad guy. That may be a lady in Omaha who's the same type of victim. And then so she receives the money that you send her, or that I send her as the money mule. She receives it because she's a money mule. And then she sends it to somebody in Newark, who then sends it to somebody in Florida, who then ends up putting it into cryptocurrency, and the money goes off overseas. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm such a believer in presentations like this, because once that money is sent, there is a extremely low likelihood that we're ever going to recover the money. Now, there's a little bit of a greater likelihood that we're going to find the bad guy. We have successful cases where we found the perpetrators and we brought them to justice, but not nearly as often as I would like. And again, making the victim whole is almost nearly impossible. And so, and again, that's because of the challenge we've talked about. Why do you think these are underreported? Embarrassment. As shocking as those numbers were that we talked about earlier, if you remember the beginning of the slideshow, I believe that's just the tip of the iceberg, because that's based on reports. That's based on what we have been told. So the $1.7 billion, I think, is just the tip of the iceberg, because these are underreported because of embarrassment. You all mentioned that. What else? They don't know how to report this. I mean, who do I report this to? Yeah. And that's great. And for those that didn't hear it, for those that might not could have heard, it's a typical scam we see. You offer something for sale, and the person sends you more money than you've asked for. And this is, it can take many forms, but the gist of it is they're going to send you $2,000 or $3,000 more than you've asked for. They want you to deposit that into your bank account. Your bank, especially if you're a well-known customer and it's not $10,000 or $15,000, we're talking about $2,000 or $3,000, your bank is going to go ahead and credit your account with that. And then you take money out of your account to send, whatever the excuse may be, send it to the guy that's going to do the picking up. That's going to be the delivery cost. I've got to send it to the delivery company. Whatever it is, you send that money. The bad guy now has $2,000, $3,000 of your money. 10 days later, potentially 10 days later, your bank realizes, oh, that was a fraudulent check. Who's out that $2,000 or $3,000? You are. And so that's something that has been in the past extremely prevalent. It's still ongoing because obviously you all were hit with it. But again, the scammers are transitioning more to these online things because they're not getting just $2,000 or $3,000. They're getting $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. But that is still something to be wary of. Again, if it doesn't smell right, you know, does it make sense? You know, this is a piece of equipment. You've asked $750. I'm sending you $2,700 or $2,800. Pause. Do exactly like they did. No sense of urgency. This thing's not going away. Call the police. I'm going to have my email address up here. I welcome contact to me. And then now's a good time to talk about the brochures you have. One of the reasons why that was mentioned, we don't know how to report this. This is a brochure for a website called IC3.gov. That's the letter I, the letter C, the number 3.gov. And that stands for Internet Crime Complaint Center. It's very user-friendly. In fact, my encouragement is for any of you that are comfortable going online, go to this website and just browse it. There's lots of resources, other examples of scams, and then an opportunity to report a scam. And it's very easy. So, for example, this check, you can go to IC3.gov and report it. What it does, it's an FBI-controlled program. It comes to us. We'll compare it with cases across the country, and we'll see, okay, yeah, there's something on this up in Michigan or Ohio or wherever. We get it all to the right place. The other beauty of this, and it goes back to my original question, why is this underreported? Because people either don't realize they're a victim or don't want to acknowledge they're a victim. So one, we may have embarrassment. Nobody wants to talk about it. But number two, they're in the middle of this relationship. That's my love, as the lady we saw. It was 5 years of bank employees, law enforcement, local police, FBI, Secret Service coming to this lady and warning her, what you're doing is acting as a money mule. What you're doing is illegal. You're taking money from victims and sending it to scammers. You've got to stop. She wouldn't believe it. The hooks were that deep. The emotional connection was that deep.
What was the mental status on her?
I mean, that's a good question. I'm not certain because I wasn't involved in that case. But the unfortunate reality is a lot of times the mental status is these are mentally well people. A lot of them really are mentally well, but they're just so connected to that relationship and so blinded. I mean, I think we all probably at one time in our life were so blinded by love that we were smarter than our parents, we were smarter than our friends. I know I was. I remember conversations with my dad. I was 20-something, but I was smarter than my dad then until now, and I realized how smart my dad was. But that just shows sometimes the power of that state where we're in. Yeah, there are some people that are mentally unwell, but for the most part, a lot of them are. A lot of them are like the other video. She was a businesswoman. She knew good sense. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. And that really is the truth. It may help somebody much younger, may help a neighbor, may help a family member. And again, that's why I would love for you to look through this brochure, go to ic3.gov, because that's one of the tools. When somebody is so blinded by either love or this is a car that's going to go away, this is my dream car, and it's too good to be true, which we all know what that means. But I don't want to lose this opportunity. If you go to ic3.gov, there's examples of scams, and you could take the person, show them, say, look, right here, these are examples of what happens. This talks about the prepaid debit cards. I mean, not nearly as easy as they make it out to be on TV. And again, I'm weary of any of those opportunities because it's maybe not necessarily some of those on TV aren't necessarily criminal, but are they in the best interest of the person calling? I would say probably not. On some of those, that's exactly what they are. And so we talk about the underreporting. We talk about the challenges of these cases because we don't know all of them. Because the money travels around the country through this vast network of money mules. The other challenge is the vast majority of these originate overseas. We do see some of them that originate in prisons or in organized crime groups, but the vast majority of these are originating overseas, some in countries that don't cooperate with us. And then some, if they do cooperate with us, again, your love or the person that you're talking to that talks about the prize you've won isn't just one person. It's a network of people, and they're just trading off, okay, it's your day on the computer, your day. So finding the one person that's ultimately responsible for this can be very challenging. We've had successes, but very challenging. And so that's why my objective is to train essentially an army of people that are armed with this knowledge and then willing to talk about it, willing to talk to the Sunday school class, the neighbors, the family. Arm yourself with the resources. Be familiar with the resources and the warning signs, and then be willing to engage in conversation at the dinner table when you're out to dinner. Hey, I heard this presentation. The guy was a Tennessee fan, but other than that... I heard this presentation, and these are some of the things he said, because you never know, that person may be in that relationship. They may be in that online relationship. Yes, sir?
One very peculiar thing is,
Well, and that goes to the whole concept of social engineering. They're going to, again, they've got teams of people that are studying groups of people, anything they can learn on them. And then they know statistics. Okay, if this is a male between these ages, the likelihood of him needing something like this. And if they target you or whatever, and it's a strikeout, they're mass targeting people. So while we may hear of some of the successes, we're not hearing about the countless ones that just delete, ignore, has nothing to do with this. So it seems like, oh my gosh, this is really good. No, they're just mass targeting. Go ahead. Well, they claim to. They claim to have credible sources. And that's, again, that goes to the compromised email. Your point is they claim to have these references. But just like a legitimate marketing company, let's say I think we're probably about to have to wrap up. Just a legitimate marketing company, if I'm selling bottles of water, I can buy mailing lists and target lists of who to mass target. The scammers do the same thing. Here's the demographic I want. This is the age group that I want to target, and they're going to buy a list of names, email addresses, phone numbers, anything that you put out there when you register for something that's going to go on a list. They can buy it and target you because they know that you're the target demographic. So essentially, these are complex. They can be overwhelming. The main thing is, as we wrap up, the main thing, the sense of urgency, slow down. Be willing to have a conversation. Even if you've taken that first step of giving a little bit of money, don't let fear or embarrassment, realize, you know, hundreds of thousands of victims each year. And then be willing to have the hard conversations with friends and family members. If you see some concerning behavior, be willing to ask, hey, has somebody told you you want a sweepstakes? Are you in an online relationship? I mean, have you met this? Ask the hard questions. Be willing to take them to that website. Share the brochure with them. Invite me in. You know, I'm happy to have conversations with folks. I call those the preemptive conversations before the problem happens. And then my final piece of homework is, if you're not satisfied or confident with the security of your online social media presence, find someone to take a look at it. A church like this that has a school, you've got young people that know this stuff forwards and backwards. My 8-year-old knows my wife's phone better than she does. He knows how to fix things. And so engage somebody's help to say, hey, take a look at my Facebook or my Instagram account and make sure that my security settings are locked down, and then help others do that. I know we've run right up to the minute. If y'all have questions or whatever, I'll stick around here, but I know some people have to cut out.